Welcome to The Last American Vagabond. Thank you for joining me today. Well, you may have seen we are under unprecedented attack. We've started a campaign to raise funds for lawyers' fees and all sorts of other things coming forward. And it's not unique to The Last American Vagabond. It's definitely an attack on independent media and really just anybody out there challenging important, you know, narratives in classically held beliefs, you know, the large events in history, all these different things we've heard discussed on YouTube and otherwise, telling you you're no longer allowed to challenge things like 9/11 or big events like this. And anybody out there that is standing up and questioning these things or having objective conversations about them are seemingly being suppressed, kicked into corners, censored entirely. And so today I wanted to have Derek Brose join me to discuss not just how The Last American Vagabond or the Conscious Resistance or any other, you know, groups within our peripheral kind of side, you know, people that are connected with Last American Vagabond and our ecosystem here, but just the entire community and how actions like this are affecting not just the people that are connected with us, but also just anybody out there who is starting something new or deciding to, or maybe scared away from the idea that if you decide to ask questions about certain things, you won't be allowed to do this anymore. So it's a really interesting thing to see how much this is changing, but it's also really terrifying for those of us that are building and have built things dependent on what we would hope would be an honest ecosystem in a media sphere. But instead, of course, are realizing or have realized a long time ago that it is set up to fail. It's designed to be able to suppress things just like this. And I wanted to talk with Derek today in particular because of how we're realizing this in real time, that it's so easy to shut this down. And I think what the one thing I want to discuss today is how much we need to come together as a community, even those of us that disagree on, you know, partisan discussions, important things. It's important that we just recognize that we're all under attack. So I want to talk with Derek today about this and how it's affecting his site as well. So Derek, how are you? It's always good to have you on the show, man. You're muted, brother.
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you making time for this important conversation, because as you said there, this is something that we've been facing for a while, and both of us believe it's probably going to be getting worse.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, and it's such a broad thing, you know, this conversation. It's like I said, it's affecting those of us that have built platforms and are in, you know, the frustrating thing about it is a consistent, stable platform, right? Like whether yours or mine's, it has a base of supporters, and that one after another, we get hit with unjustified suppression, or, you know, like the way I frame it in a general sense is it seems to be constantly two steps forward, one step back, over and over and over. And nonetheless, we persevere, right? We stay the course and we keep pushing. And that's not unique to just our platforms. Anybody in this field has dealt with that I would say that I see as objectively nonpartisan kind of a concept, but is experiencing the exact same thing. And, you know, the question in general, you know, what do we do about this? How do we circumvent these control structures? Now, there's a lot of, you know, privacy, like the above phone, Ramiro, and things like that. Those are the steps we should be taking. But is it even feasible at this point? Is it possible to pull yourself out of these systems and start something in these parallel economies and media spheres while still having the same influence? I mean, these are the things that we're all battling with, and they're absolutely taking advantage of that. You know, and so we started with the campaign, the Save the Last American Vagabond, which we'll include in there. And obviously, this is The Last American Vagabond, which includes Derek Brose, Whitney Webb, Taylor Hudak, Robert Inlakesh. But the thing I was mentioning to begin with is that it also affects their platforms as well. And not just because of the funding coming from TLAV for the work they do for TLAV, but because this suppression is not unique to TLAV. You know, so it's a really alarming situation. So let's start with how this has affected your work from the Conscious Resistance perspective. So in what ways has this trickled down, and just speaking about the attacks on TLAV, to affect your work with the Conscious Resistance?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, for those who aren't aware at this point, you know, I've been writing for Ryan for TLAV we're about to hit our 4-year anniversary in May of this year, because it started in the middle of or the early days of COVID. When Ryan brought me on as a, you know, exclusive writer for TLAV, I used to write for dozens of different websites, and, you know, we've been working exclusively for 4 years now. And so, I mean, just on that most basic front, TLAV and the money coming through there has been a steady income for me. So when TLAV's under attack and Ryan has to focus his resources on fighting lawsuits or dealing with other situations, you know, that is obviously going to impact me and my ability to make money and my ability to continue to do the work. And of course, I do have my own website. I have some of my own kind of monthly supporters. But by and large, I'll just be honest, like I've kind of stopped putting so much energy into that over the years because I knew I could count on a steady income coming from TLab. And I've just been blessed and honored to have that, Ryan, because of you and because of our supporters through TLab. So yeah, I mean, that's like kind of the most direct thing is when TLab is under attack, then obviously it's going to affect those of us who get paid through the TLab network and through the TLab income. So that's kind of the first thing for me is just kind of having to adjust with getting the news from you that you're dealing with these ridiculous situations and how that's going to impact you. And then that has, you know, that kind of puts me in a situation of deciding, okay, what do I have to do now? Like, you know, I don't think I would ever go back to a quote unquote day job. I've been doing this for 14 mm-hmm. years now. This is my job, but it's just about, and this isn't the first time something like this has happened either. I will say that any, if you work in independent media long enough, these kinds of things will happen. And, you know, one of the skills I've learned over the years is to be adaptable, to be, right. to learn to navigate these sort of things. You know, I went from at one point writing for three different independent media websites to kind of make an income just to survive and, you know, doing articles here, this and other things. And I have other streams of income, maybe book sales and stuff like that, but none of it, which is like consistently paying my bills, you know, occasional things come in. So it's not like the first time I've had to juggle these balls and I'm fully trusting and knowing that everything's going to turn out okay. But that doesn't mean there's not a struggle in the meantime. It doesn't mean that it's not kind of a scary, unnerving thing to be like, oh, all that security I just felt is kind of now up in the air. You know, what's the next step? And I think that's really why we want to have this conversation, just to illustrate and to emphasize to everybody who's hearing this, who follows my work at the Conscious Resistance or follows my writing through TLab or just follows Ryan, that, you know, we really can't do this without you. I mean, the people who have, I'll just say this, the people who have been around doing this the longest, like I think of James Corbett and others who are doing it the longest and the most successfully, are people who have been able to cultivate that audience of dedicated monthly and yearly supporters. And I know for a fact that if James didn't have that, he wouldn't be able to do all the things he does to pay his editor, Brock, and to, you know, continue to pump out all the content that we love and continue to wake up the world. There could come a point, like, let's say for whatever reason, if James lost that support, he might have to go back to teaching English in Japan like he started 20 years ago, you know, which is, right. as he famously tells his story. So, you know, we're all sort of kind of hanging on the edges and dependent on community support. And, you know, the reason I think that's a positive and not a negative, because maybe some people hear that and we can talk more about these sort of responses later. But after we shared what was going on, I got overwhelmingly positive responses, but there were a couple of emails of like, oh, go get a real job. You know, I lost my job during COVID and I didn't ask for handouts. But I want people to really understand that journalism has historically and forever, since the very beginning days of journalism, going back to the 1800s, been dependent on one of two things, either rich benefactors, you know, philanthropists funding it. And then, of course, that creates all kinds of questions about what do they want you to report on and are you allowed to report on certain things? Or advertising, you know, newspapers, of course, used to be filled with ads and that's how they made money. They sold ads to corporations and to companies. And then in the age of the internet, the early days of the independent media and some independent media still, you would see like Google ads all over our websites and none of us liked it. It's all always ugly, you know, toenails and random crap that Google puts on there. But that was how we were making money is you send traffic to the website, people see the ads, they click on the ads and that generates income and you pay your writers. But once the censorship began, we realized that wasn't going to work anymore because then Google said, hey, you're disinformation. I'm not going to let you put Google ads on your website anymore. And so we've just been trying to navigate this for the last few years. And the unfortunate reality is that a lot of independent media has died off and has had to go. I know plenty of great journalists, former kind of independent writers who have had to go to other jobs and had to move on because they were under attack. They couldn't survive. Maybe the audience wasn't willing to donate and to invest. And I do prefer to say invest instead of donate because this isn't just a charity. This isn't a handout. Like really, if you think about it, when you give Ryan some monthly support or you give me some monthly support, you're investing in the fact that you're going to be able to count on articles, video breakdowns, in my case, like documentaries and just all the different kinds of content that we produce, you're investing in it. So just like you would go pay a couple dollars for a newspaper back in the day, we're just asking people who are in our audience to recognize the value that we bring and to invest in us so we can continue to do this.
Absolutely. And that's the importance of the recurring discussion. And what we can get into more of that in a minute. And I think you're absolutely right. It's, the important thing again is about how it's not this honest engagement. It's not, you know, if left to its own devices and there was no suppression and censorship, I don't think the mainstream media would even exist the way that it does today with what has risen around with the independent media. So it comes back to this constant act of two steps forward, one step back. And, you know, to your point, you know, there's been a lot of different examples in just TLAB's history where we have tried, even just recently, as you remember, where I thought, okay, you know, we are at a point where we clearly see more. And this is even before the most recent attacks about let's try to see if we can find some larger entity that wants to support us in a way that does not influence our content. And I had that conversation. I asked my viewers, I asked the supporters, you know, what do you think? And I genuinely put out feelers with a lot of different people, including lots of people that you guys know that I'm not going to mention because they did their best effort to try to help. The point is, roundly dismissed by any advertising element, anybody out there that might otherwise, and you know, and why? Yeah, we have a valid concept. People support this. There's a lot of revenue coming through here. There's clearly something that could be used, but I don't understand why. My point was, I've realized that that's just not there for TLAB, which is interesting to me. So I decided to go back to what has always been there with you guys, you know, and triple, double, quadruple down into the donation-based model, which I'm glad shout out to Corbett. I'm glad that I leaned into that a long time ago because it gives you some level of freedom from that censorship, you know? But that's the interesting part about it is like we did try to go these other routes. And so it's not like there's this hat in the hand kind of concept. It's like the point being those things are just not there for some people in this field and it's in a surreptitious way. And we've also dealt with constant year after year, like going back to the very beginning before I even started the daily wrap up, the censorship aspects from Google AdSense. Like before I had ever even done anything but this old cannabis website and we already got booted off AdSense and things like that. So it was, you know, a negative there, but it forced me into this kind of parallel mindset. But the point is that all the way back then, we've gone one after another and we've just kept persevering because of your guys' support. You know, and so I guess before we go further, as you were discussing in the beginning, I've already explained it a few different times, but I guess we should just further elaborate on ultimately what is happening here. And so for those that haven't already read through this, and I recommend you read what I wrote here on the Gifts and Go or the website page, just because I you know, wrote it out very specifically. But the bottom line is we are being now sued. TLAB as the business, the LLC, is being sued by two different people, two completely separate lawsuits, not connected at all, yet through the same lawyer. I find that to be very obvious, quite frankly. My lawyer also senses the same exact thing. They don't seem to respond to any of the way that he perceived them to be the kind of people. And this is the group that they are, by the way. And I'm not going to give any more details on who they are and so on. I promise I will, no matter what, at some point. I won't just because he recommends not giving any more details because, you know, anybody been in this position, you know that smallest things can shoot you in the foot if we end up going to court. But I will end up giving more information, in particular who this law group is, because I've found multiple articles written over the years about how this is essentially an ambulance chaser platform that just dumps threats at anybody everywhere in hopes of getting some amount of money. Which is that's the thing that was interesting is my lawyer attempted to try to find that middle ground, which he argued was a no-brainer. We give them something, they're going to take it because that's what they're here for. They don't want to go to court, but yet they didn't respond. And they're asking for like an exorbitant, like 20 grand from one of these groups for something very minor ultimately. And ultimately otherwise going to court. And so it just doesn't make sense to him. He feels this is about trying to drown, you know, take funds and drown me in this problem. And then separately, it seems in the same month, I got this gigantic, I think it's about $30,000 bill from the IRS claiming it's from 2012. Now, a lot of people have pointed out rightly that there's a discussion about a time frame and that's supposed to be outside of that. I agree. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. The argument they're making is this is something that has been just like this has been a long lasting problem. I've been dealing with my accountant on the year other years about specific things about smaller amounts they claim I owe for the longest time. He's been involved with this. He has my power of attorney in regard to the situation. He's never seen this. The point is, it seemed out of nowhere to me. I don't have any of these documents to be able to point out things that, no, I disagree. We're kind of at a loss here. My point is, I'm not going to say I know for sure this is some kind of organized attack, but I don't understand how this makes sense. 2012 at a time when I was not even doing this as a cook. And you're going to tell me I owe you that much money? Anyway, the point is all of this kind of got dumped in my lap. And even if it is something, I mean, the bottom line is all of it comes together to be immediately in this moment at a time that I find to be the most important, completely suppressing what I can do with The Last American Vagabond, which comes back to the point about paying the writers and so on. And of course, they're even threatening to levy my assets, which I look around. The only thing that I have is The Last American Vagabond. So anyway, so all that being said, you know, it's hard not to kind of encapsulate that, but I read the writing and I will cover more of it. But it's interesting to see this. And again, it's not unique to The Last American Vagabond. There's a lot of people out there that have been suppressed and attacked. I point out Dr. Mercola and his bank account, right? And the people in his company, even their children, getting their bank accounts yanked. Now, I also, do you have any comments in that part of it, Derek? I was going to go to the TikTok ban thing to reference it. Go ahead.
I just want to say that, I mean, like you said, we don't have 100% proof that this is related to the work at the moment, and maybe we never will get that, you know, documentation or whatever. But I think most of us can kind of surmise that based on everything going on, these kind of things, like you said, this is a standard operating procedure of governments and just people. I definitely think when the time is right, we should do a full investigation into the law firms and like see what we can find, any kind of spurious connections that might be worth investigating. But I do think, generally speaking, tying people up in lawsuits, draining the resources is a classic strategy, you know, that is nothing new. And it could be something that is being done on purpose. They know that, I would assume they being anybody, whether that's a government watching or somebody who's just doesn't like the work, would be aware that neither one of us and nobody on the team is multimillionaires. And so we're not like just able to sit here and fight lawsuits indefinitely. And if they can not only drain your financial resources, but consume your time so that you don't have the time to do the research and the work that you want to do and that people want from you. Like you said, you've got support coming in because people obviously value the work. So there's a clear relationship here. And there it seems, I would say the goal here is just to get in between that relationship to try to slow you down, to slow us down, and at the very least make you use some financial resources that might hinder your ability to continue growing, right? If they can keep us from growing, I can speak more to this later on in terms of my personal things I've dealt with at the Conscious Resistance, because I definitely have seen, you know, this massive peak back in, let's say, 2018, 2019, right before COVID, just like the biggest traffic I was getting on my website, unique view hits. And then the last 3 to 4 years, I'll be honest, like just massive sink, massive, you know, loss in direct traffic to my site. And I don't think that's, you know, those things happen accidentally. You know, I think this is exactly what they would prefer, is that we suffer financial consequences. We have to spend extra time fighting things like this. And then we have less time or less energy to continue doing the good work. And then before you know it, people forget about T-Lab. They forget about the Conscious Resistance, or the audience shrinks a great amount, you know. And then, you know, to sort of a bigger topic that we're not necessarily going to get into today, but I know we both feel strongly about it. What happens when our audiences notice that, well, Ryan's kind of taking a break because he's got to fight this lawsuit, and Derek's, you know, trying to figure things out because he's not getting financial income right now, so he's got to do something else. I guess I'll give my attention to these other platforms. And you have all these, you know, mainstream alternative media that are on the rise, and they sure seem to be benefiting. And I definitely think there's efforts like that to direct people away from what I consider genuine independent media like you and me towards other alleged independent media that might have some more shady connections and that perhaps could be pushing narratives that, you know, they would prefer the people to follow, you know, instead of following more truly independent media. So I think this is, we might not have that clear evidence, but we can all kind of get a feel for what's happening here.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, to me, the argument is really about, you know, the idea that this is definitely affecting what we can accomplish, you know, and what it's frivolous, which we'll get into in regard to the actual company itself, which we will end up discussing. It just doesn't add up. And it seems, again, the same lawyer, right? And this, and kind of directly, that to me either tells me that that's his choice as a personal attack, you know, whatever. I just don't see the likelihood of that randomly happening, you know, in any sense. The point is that it affects the work that we can do. And so, you know, whether it's about this or something else or the lack of fun, you know, we need the support to continue to do the work that we're doing. And so does anybody else in this field. And I think it's always directed at kind of chopping away at that in any possible way, draining those funds so you can't put it elsewhere. And, you know, and these are funds that we don't have. I mean, these are things that we're putting toward the day-to-day work. And that's, I think, the entire point. You know, and then again, to your point about the larger element that absolutely is benefiting from the suppression of these, my website in the same way, The Last American Vagabond, it's down, I mean, more than 50% over our, like the same thing, like right about like 2021, right? A lot of the COVID conversation, we had a big spike as well, but already even before that, we were already doing a lot of traffic, you know, 10,000, 20,000 a day for the most part around that time. And then just on a just nosedive, like even during some of the most popular COVID coverage, just down almost 50%. And the weirdest thing, and this is what I was talking about with Corbett and other people I asked about this, see, they're all seeing similar things, that the Rumble and other platforms were exploding. We're getting more traffic than ever on the content elsewhere, but the sites are going down. To me, that shows a very obvious suppression, you know? And this is what it all comes back to, is about the flow of information, you know? And it's very—
Can I just add to that real quick, mm-hmm. Ryan? So I just want to say, just on that with the Rumble specifically, and you know, not to get into the whole Rumble conversation, but I am one of the people, I think like you, that are skeptical or at least concerned about Rumble and some of the funding of like people like Peter Thiel and others. But I do think that what you pointed to is something that has been a problem for the last decade. And that is that our audience here, including some of you who listen to it, maybe you don't even visit the lastamericanvagabond.com. Maybe you don't even visit the consciousresistance.com. You're watching this on Rumble right now, or you're watching it on, you know, Facebook or Twitter or whatever else. And, you know, of course we appreciate the views wherever we get them, but the point is we benefit so much more if you go to our websites and watch our content, because not only if Rumble does decide to start censoring people after everybody puts all their eggs in that basket, like we did before with Facebook and everything else, you might be one of the people who I actually have heard like, oh, I thought you stopped creating content because you disappeared off YouTube back in 2020. It's like, nope, I've still been doing it. I've told you guys for years, go to theconsciousresistance.com. That's where you're going to always find my content. So the more kind of trained people get to just focus on the video platforms and the social media platforms, I do believe it's easier to kind of guide their attention, because again, right. if one of us just disappears, you know, how many are going to follow up with? Based on the numbers I've seen, once I got deleted off YouTube in October 2020 for COVID disinformation, and I was at 70K subscribers, I haven't got those 70K subscribers back, like maybe spread across platforms, but I don't have one single platform at the moment that has that same amount. So most of those people, you know, they were just going on YouTube and consuming the content. And now that YouTube's not showing it to them anymore, they're just like, oh, I guess he disappeared or he doesn't exist anymore. And if people, though, would make that little bit of extra effort to visit our website a couple times a week, they could still stay up to date with our content, or every day if you can, but at the very least a couple times a week, and see the content we're putting out directly on the website. And then, of course, through the website, you can still watch the links on Rumble and wherever else, but at least you're bringing the traffic to us, because I guarantee you, Rumble doesn't need the extra traffic. YouTube doesn't need the extra traffic. Twitter doesn't need the extra traffic. But when we can look at our numbers and we can see we're getting, you know, 100,000 views a week or whatever the deal may be, not only is that showing us that we're reaching people, but if we did ever decide to, say, partner with an independent company for sponsorships or something like that, we actually have some numbers we can show these potential supporters. I mean, I think those things, that's just another way we could potentially make income. So it's useful in multiple fronts for you to go to our websites, not only because, again, relying on social media, we could be here today, gone tomorrow, and you might not even notice unless you're one of our really dedicated supporters. But it gives us the awareness that we are reaching people. And sometimes it's harder to tell that. We can see the, you know, the view count on social media sites, but I don't know about you, Ryan, but I do still have trouble trusting those numbers often, whether that means high or low or whatever. So it's just easier, I think, for you to keep in touch with us, to follow us directly. We try to put our content, I know we both take the same strategy, we put it everywhere we can, but ultimately, like, our home on the internet is our website. And that's where we benefit the most when you come visit and you stay in touch with us. That's just, so I just want to emphasize that if you're not doing that, if you're only watching us on whatever platform you're on right now, take some time a couple times a week, bookmark the website, just visit it. You know, it's all, like, I go to Corbett Report a couple times a week and see what James has put out. I check out what you, you know, I have a few people that I keep up with in that way, so I'm not dependent on their various social media feeds to tell me if they're putting out new stuff.
Right. And to be clear, you know, the Last American Vagabond is not in this important actually for what we're dealing with, is not monetized in any way. Right. There's obviously ways you can donate through that to other outside platforms, but the website, no matter what traffic we get, there's no connection to traffic and revenue, right? And so that this is really just about, you know, for me, the most important point, I agree with everything Derek said, but I think the most important point is about, like, the thing I've said on every interview ever about this. Don't let them be the conduit between you and our information. Like, it's exactly what Derek was describing. It's because the mindset is you go to Rumble, right? So even if your mindset is T-Lab or Conscious Resistance, you go to Rumble and you go, and maybe he's not there, or he didn't talk about the thing you want to see that day. You don't go back to Conscious Resistance to look for that topic. You look on Rumble. Who else is talking about what I want to see, right? Because that's become your conduit. Now, if you go to the website, now maybe it's a little bit extra work, but go to Conscious Resistance, The Last American Vagabond, The Corbett Report, and you look there, and as opposed to Rumble for this simplified portal, which, by the way, is used to flavor what you're looking at and suggest things to make you look in certain directions. It's social engineering. Even if it's not surreptitious, that's what these platforms are doing, right? And so that's why that's so important. And I think it's really, you know, about the controlled flow of information in every possible way, which, by the way, brings us back to that point that I wanted to raise about why this is so important. Right now, if you haven't seen this about the TikTok conversation, this what Massey's been talking about this a lot. The bill has passed the House and full support, bipartisan support, left and right, in regard to what they're using. And now here's the other one as well, as he's calling it a Trojan horse, to essentially argue it's about TikTok. But in reality, if you look at the actual legislation, as usual, it's about really whatever administration's in control can essentially ban a website they deem to be as much of a threat or in the same category. It's completely subjective, right? So that's going to represent really all. I think Rubio put a thing out today basically saying, you know, here's what, you know, basically arguing that TikTok, when this was happening, used the website to drive people to vote against it. So how do you not see how this is used for propaganda? And it's like, what a moron. Like, you mean like literally every news or like information flowing device or platform in the world, newspapers, social media? So as I'm saying that, I'm like, ah, that's exactly the point. That's a setup to be like, those are the same. And it's like, you're right. We need to control and censor them all because they can all be used. That's the mindset. Being able to rationalize why they have to suppress and choose what you're allowed to look at, because here's the good, here's the bad. TikTok good, bad, Twitter good, even though they're the exact same thing. So this is where we're at right now, you know, and I feel like this is kind of the precursor to what we're dealing with, like all these different things, and not just what I'm talking about for here or TLAB, but what we've all seen over the last year, even like post the height of the COVID illusion. We've all seen like a lot of increased, interesting kind of suppression and censorship, you know? So where do you see this going? Do you feel the same way about that bill?
I hadn't seen that one you were showing right there, but I had seen Justin Amash tweeting about it too as well, talking about the kind of the hidden things within this TikTok ban. And I mean, like, big surprise, right? Like, every time every time they name something, there's usually much more going on. They call it like the Freedom Bill, and it's actually all tyrannical and stuff like that. So of course, if they call it the TikTok ban bill, there's going to be much more going on than that. And this is just how they operate. And it's not surprising, because I do think there are problems with TikTok. I think there's probably, you know, there could be,
I agree,
you know, surreptitious Chinese influence. Like, that's a real legitimate thing that there should be a conversation. But of course, the government would take that opportunity to then kind of, with a bigger swath, kind of grab other powers that they've been wanting for a while. We were talking about this earlier, that like the next step is being, and this has been the step for a while, but I guess we're finally here, to start targeting websites specifically. Because if they're mm-hmm. already kind of, right now, we've already seen banning on social media, debanking, taking off PayPal, Patreon, those kind of right. things. But the main thing we haven't seen, maybe with a few sites, like, you know, they start, of course, with the most extreme, like some Nazi websites, the government took them down and nobody complained, right? But then we'll get to the point where, okay, we're going to give the government's going to give itself the powers to label any website extreme or propaganda or whatever label they want, and then take it down. And maybe there'll be an outcry in the beginning, but as is typical with these things, once it becomes normalized, I mean, the average person is probably going to have no idea. Like, there's still people that are out there today that don't know that, you know, censorship is a real thing on the internet. They just think that's some right-wing conspiracy theory or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, for me, this is clearly, as always, a Trojan horse. I mean, this is the thing. It's the best way to put it is your government or even the media will almost, the best manipulations almost usually involve the majority of truth. Like, it's, you know, the 99% truth, 1% lie concept, right? Where that's the most dangerous, where you're given, like, to your point, like TikTok, no one's in this conversation arguing that TikTok is the opposite of what they're saying. See, that's the partisan manipulation, is where if I come out and say, this is not what they say it is, you immediately assume I must be what the left is saying or what the other side. It's not as binary as that. That's not how the world works. You know, it's obvious that this social media platform, just like literally any other one we can point at, is most likely being used to engineer the way you see the world and manipulate the way you think about certain policy. Of course it is. That's what Twitter and Facebook and there's been countless studies that prove that's what they are used for, right? And of course, you sharing what you ate that day and the weather, you know, those things are there too. So the most important thing is that there are never let a good crisis go to waste mindset, utilizing this step, acting like they care about this while doing the same thing with Twitter to you right now, to try to set it up to censor and to control the internet even more at a time when they've never been at more, never felt more insecure about the control of narratives, right? And the, yeah. the interesting part about this is there's an overlap with the Israel conversation. Have you seen the hearings with the Singaporean owner or CEO guy of the TikTok where you know, all the questions they're asking him are ridiculous. And I'm not saying for all we know, he's lying, but it's just this front they keep putting, this blustering, this, you know, where they come up and like, when he was asking him, like, are you a member of the CCP? And he goes, no, man, I'm from Singapore. And the guy's like, have you ever joined the Chief Party? He's like, no, man, I'm from Singapore. Like, this is so funny. But, and they think by asking these directed continual questions, it's like framing something. It's just propaganda. Or maybe they know something I don't, but it's clearly, the point was, when you get into it, even I think it was it Rubio? No, I think it was one of the politicians basically discussed that one of the issues they held the most was that they are promoting anti-Israel talking points. Now, my point is, are they promoting those? Maybe to a degree, or is that just what people are promoting themselves? Right? There's a point to be made about whether that's just a platform that is allowing them to say these things, whereas Twitter seems to be suppressing them. Now, what's more, you know, is it that you have an issue with the content or that one of them's allowing you to say it and the other one's not, and we're having an issue with the one that's allowing you to say them? I don't know. But I think it's interesting that it seems to be a focal point at a time when it seems focused on China, but then you got this Israel, you know, I don't know. How do you read that?
I mean, I think you're correct there. I mean, at the end of the day, I really think that this is all about censorship. This is all about control. So they could, you know, we know that the Zionists, they don't want criticism of Israel to be widely seen by people. And they know that it's a very popular sentiment at the moment. So yeah, Twitter and, you know, free speech Elon is shutting down people, all sorts of people for speaking out about the crimes of Israel. And like you said, there could be something going on. Maybe China has a reason to promote those sort of things on TikTok. But also, genuinely speaking, like the average person on TikTok is the younger generation, Gen Z or whatever you want to call them. And a lot of those people do not like Israel and, you know, do not like what's going on. Biden has lost a lot of support from that. So I would think that most of that probably would be genuine. So at the end of the day, these tyrants are going to use whatever excuse they can to control our access to social media, to control our access to information. And then, you know, just to kind of bring it back full circle, that's why what we're doing, what you're doing, what I try to do is so important, and what other people like us who are out here struggling and doing our best to survive at, because if they succeed in controlling the social media platforms even more than they already are, and if they get to a point where they can shut down our websites, then there won't be an independent media to report on these things. And you're going to be left with the New York Times and all the other garbage mainstream media, which we also, by the way, know is actually in the process of dying because they're having to fire a lot of employees. So right. You're going to be left with a very barren landscape as far as truth is concerned. You're going to have the official mouthpieces of the governments of the world, which are paywalled, and, you know, they only give you certain information when they want to. And then maybe a few independent media folks who can survive and continue to do it on their own. But I guess what we're here doing this interview for, not only to bring all the interesting topics that we've just touched on here, but to really emphasize to you guys that we cannot survive without you. And we know that all of you out there are hardworking people who maybe, you know, you listen to Ryan or you listen to me while you're working, you put on a podcast and you're, you know, hard at work, or when you get home from a hard day's work, we get that. We empathize with that and totally understand that. Both Ryan and I come from a working class background. And before we found our way here, this, you know, we were just like you, just doing the work to survive and also caring about the world. We've decided to dedicate our time and our lives to this. And so if you find value in what we're doing, and if you've, I would say even more so, if you've been consuming the content for months or even years at a time and you've never invested in us, like, this is your opportunity to do so. We're trying to just use this moment, which Ryan is facing and T-Lab is facing, and we all pray we'll get through and Ryan will have, you know, least battle scars as possible. We're using this moment to say, like, look, we need your help. If you've never realized that, you know, we've spent hundreds of hours of time, energy, researching, writing, talking to people, trying to bring you information that we think will empower you and educate you so that you can handle and face the situations we're all facing more empowered and more aware, so you can make whatever decisions you need to make for your family moving forward. Like, that's the whole reason we're doing this. This isn't just like infotainment, conspiratainment. This is true independent journalism meant to give you the information that we think you need so that you can go home and decide, okay, I just learned about this new thing that Ryan told me or that I heard from Derek, and I need to think about how I'm going to handle that for my family in the coming months. That is the true reason we're doing this. This isn't just because we like talking at the computer all day or because we like patting ourselves on the back. We are doing this because we're dedicated to this work. And so if you find value in what we're doing, you know, we're really, really emphasizing, like, we need monthly and yearly subscribers. We're both on Substack. I'm also on Buy Me a Coffee. I think you are too, Ryan. And there's other ways to support us. But if you haven't yet, I really just want to humbly ask, you know, if you can't give to both of us, give to one of us. You know, neither one of us take it personally. We both want to see each other succeed. If T-Lab succeeds, then I will continue to, you know, write for T-Lab. And I will say my goal has been, as I told Ryan from the beginning, to have the Conscious Resistance. I want the Conscious Resistance to be succeeding as much as T-Lab has been so that I can be in the position Ryan is and I can hire more writers. And we can have even another strong independent media outlet that's pumping out important content so that there's even more impactful information out there. And one other thing, just to kind of maybe make it as tangible as possible, Ryan, I actually went through and I think last week just calculated, you know, how many followers or subscribers do I have on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, blah, 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 all the way down to TikTok and Instagram, which I don't really use a whole lot, to my email list. And I know you have more subscribers, followers than I do. But for me, when I calculated last week, it was at like 170,000 across all the platforms. And I'm really grateful for that. And I know you have even more than that. And so I did the math. And if even just a tiny fraction of that, if 150 to 300 people decide to sign up at $10 a month, I could not only continue to make the money I was making through T-Lab writing, but in addition to that, I could have that security and say, hey, you know what? We can do bigger things now. I can bring on more writers, Ryan, you know? So it really isn't like we're asking for all 170,000 plus people who follow me and then, you know, the 200,000 plus people who follow you across platforms. But if even 5% of you decided, you know what, this is valuable enough that I'm going to not have a coffee once a week so I can give that to Ryan or to Derek, or I'm going to skip going to the bar one of these weekends where I blow $60 without thinking about it, and I'm going to sign up for $60 a year for T-Lab or for the Conscious Resistance. If 300 of you did that to my platform, and I'm sure it's a similar number for you, Ryan, we would be good. Like, you know, we would be in a position where we could actually stay afloat. And I think that matters. Of course, we appreciate everybody who donates once. If all you can do is throw a dollar our way one time, of course, we're grateful for that. But if you can afford to do these recurring donations, that's where it really matters. That gives us the security where we can look at and say, you know what, next month, this same amount is coming in. And so I don't have to stress. I don't have to start thinking about a day job or working some extra things. Like, I can just dedicate myself to the work, which is what we love to do. And we can continue to give you guys the content that you want. So just want to really put it in those tangible numbers.
Mm-hmm. Right. And also I'd like to make sure we demonstrate and shout out the, you know, our track record speaks for itself. Right. And I think that's the, like he said, we're not just here to just kind of jump on and just rattle off talking to thoughts and talking, but like our work has been very clearly ahead of the curve for a very long time. And that's not, you know, you could say that I'm patting myself on the back, but I think that's demonstrating the exact static reality of what we've been doing. You know, the many things we've covered over the years, and it's because we're doing our best to be objective and nonpartisan and only discuss what we can prove. And I think that, you know, there's value there. And I think you guys recognize that. Now, I want to already shout out all the amazing people that have already done, you know, signed up for recurring and have sent the donations you have. Like I said the other day, my heart is absolutely full. I'm overwhelmed with how much support we've gotten. And it is amazing to see. And it just fills my heart. And I think that what Derek is saying, and I agree, is I think that what we're trying to strive for is that continual recurring concept. You know, it's like I said the other day, if you're thinking about giving $50 to one of us instead, just do $1 a month. I mean, that's the crazy thing about it. It's $12 a year. Like, very few people would ever really even think about that again. And then you are the last American backbone. You are the Conscious Resistance for the rest of your life. You know, it's like, there's nothing else you need. Just support, share the content. And I think that's what we're striving for, is to get, you know, if you think about that, 100,000 of those, we could rival what they're doing. You know what I mean? That's important. But either way, the support you guys have already shown is overwhelming. And I just want to shout out everybody who has sent the amazing prayers on the Give, Send, Go platform, the amazing notes, and all your support going back a decade. And I just want to end with pointing this out in general, that on that bill we're talking about, in the TikTok bill, it says threats posed from a foreign adversary controlled application, such as TikTok. And in the bill, it actually lists websites as these possibilities, right? So think back about all these different times that we have been called a Russian shill, or that's actually coming from individuals, but like a government level, that we're a Russian bot, or that we're a Syrian proxy, or, you know, all these different. Now it's starting. You can see why these things are being leveled all these years, because they're going to argue, well, you've said this, right? You're saying this about Israel, therefore you're a Palestinian Hamas. And, you know, that's how that will work. And historically, they don't need anything else. I mean, legally they do, but these people don't care about the law, right? They care about using it as a tool to control you. So just recognize that this is only going to get more difficult, and we're going to do everything we can to bolster our platforms to, you know, protect us from what they're trying to do. And it may come a time where, I mean, literally, I was just talking with Whitney about this in regard to, you know, maybe we should start going back to print in a small way, like just get realizing that literally may be where we're going in this world. And either way, just know that we're not going to stop. We like, even if we recognize, and let me speak for myself, even if I recognize that I know we're going to fail, I'm going to go ahead and fight till the end because that's who I am, right? I think that's what we all, people in this field, Derek, that's what we're here for, you know? So thank you, Derek.
With you, man.
Well, thank you for being here, brother. I think it's important that we continue to put up a fight, you know, and I think that's who we are. So thank you for the support from the beginning, now going forward, because we couldn't do this without you. As I said, you are the last American vagabond. So thank you for being here. As always, question everything, come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.